Images of orphanages recur throughout literature. From Dickens, Oliver Twist, to Little Orphan Annie, the enduring message is that orphanages are places of deprivation and despair, where kids do hard labor without love or reward.
I hated it. I resented it. I won't even lie.
June Tibuleka is a medical student at Duke now, but when she was growing up in Uganda, her father died of AIDS. In much of the world, kids who lose one parent, especially a breadwinner father, are considered orphans. Tibuleka's mother was left destitute after his death. To survive, she sent 8-year-old June and two of her sisters away to a school where the girls had to fend for themselves, like hauling their own water for bathing and drinking.
It was a long distance, and we'd have to go take our buckets, you know, on our heads, go down to the swamp, bring the water up, carrying it on our heads. If you could see the buckets we carried, because, you know, we had to maximize, water. It was... When I think about it now, I wonder how we got through it, you know?
Amazingly, though, Tibuleka says she's grateful for the experience.
Because I've been through it, I can go through anything and still be happy and still be, you know, grateful.
It's estimated there are about 45 million kids worldwide who've lost either one or both parents, or who have little social or financial support in their immediate families. Kate Wetton is a global health researcher who heads the Center for Public Health Policy at Duke University. Last year, she published results of a long-term study looking at how kids in 5 poor countries fared over time. She looked at kids placed with foster caregivers in the community, as well as kids who ended up in so-called orphanages. Almost all of the 3,000 kids she followed lived in extremely poor communities.
The results that we got just kept coming out so strongly that kids in the institutions were doing, and again, that word, like orphanage, conjures up a stereotype that we have in our heads, that those kids at the aggregate level were doing as well or better than kids who are in the communities.
Over time, kids in institutions did better on health and emotional outcomes, cognitive development, and educational attainment. And Wetton says care in those orphanages didn't look like the stereotype, with harridans as caregivers.
Half or more of the caregivers aren't paid caregivers. They're there as women who perhaps for whatever reason have been kicked out of their communities, out of their families, maybe because of a disease. And so they decide to come and stay there. So you actually do have a long-term caregiver. It's not the model where people are paid to come in and out. All of that happens also.
Wetton says she didn't go looking for a comparison of orphanages versus foster care, even though that's what she found. She published her paper last year and started work on a follow-up. Then went and started hearing from people in this country who run residential care facilities. They saw her data as affirming what they're doing here. Crossnoor is one of those residential care facilities in the mountains of western North Carolina. It was started 97 years ago, but current director Phyllis Crane says little has changed.
It was moonshine that was really destroying the family. And today, it's meth labs would be the common denominator. So we have, you know, huge sibling groups that are removed from homes where, you know, shacks where the kitchen is a meth lab.
Since coming to Crossnoor a decade ago, Crane has raised money to improve the grounds and build new cottages for residents. She also started an on-site school that has therapy facilities in the same building. She says education is key for helping these kids succeed.
My children, it's not uncommon, here at Crossnoor have been in 6 or 8 or 10 foster homes before they even come to me.
Entrance testing at Crossnoor has shown that kids arriving there are, on average, 2.5 years behind their peers in school achievement.
What I see, if a child is able to be with us, and especially through part of middle school and through high school, we can help them make up and we can close that 2.5 or 3 year gap, bring them up to their age mates, help them achieve their high school diploma. And then we have a host of scholarships that we help these children go on to college.
Walk into the sunlit cafeteria at Crossnoor and you'll meet dozens of kids who have big dreams and want to tell you about them. Most of the older kids go on to college or other post-secondary education. 17-year-old Anthony will finish high school this summer. His dad has been in and out of prison, and his mom has substance abuse issues. Anthony was way behind when he arrived at Crossnoor about 3 years ago, but he's heading to a technical college this fall.
My family really loves this place. They've been really thankful to have been here, and they definitely recognize that it's been a life changer for me.
Mm-hmm. Have they been able to get some services here too?
Family counseling.
Yeah?
Yeah, me and my grandparents have had family counseling sessions here. It's been off and on, but the family counseling sessions we did have were really tremendously helpful.
Only about a quarter of teenagers in foster care ever graduate high school, and they have all kinds of problems as young adults. But policy in the U.S. has, for years, favored foster care over residential settings. And that's where the money goes, too.
Children do better in family-like settings.
Fred Wulschen does research at Chapin Hall, an institute at the University of Chicago that focuses on child welfare issues. He says kids don't do as well with hired caregivers who come and go.
Kids are, in effect, wired to relate to a caregiver. There's a fairly robust literature in the neurodevelopmental world that says some of the basic behavior and regulatory mechanisms that children develop early in life are predicated on a stable relationship with a single caregiver.
Wulschen and other researchers say evidence indicates kids don't get those kinds of stable relationships in residential care. Plus, it's more expensive than foster care. But when pressed, Wulschen and others admit no one really knows what works best for kids who've been neglected or abused and who need to live outside their families. Wulschen says in the U.S., we've underfunded the child care system, and we haven't put the resources towards finding out what does work.
A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. You know, at what point does the government assume a set of responsibilities to not simply talk about the best interests of the child, but to have the knowledge it needs to actually act in the best interest of the child?
And that's part of the reason Wetton's research on orphans in other countries has been reverberating here. It contradicts what's been the accepted wisdom driving childcare policy in the U.S. for years. Wetton is gearing up for a continuation of her study of kids in residential care. But this time, she plans to include American kids in the study groups as well. Rose Hoban, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.